Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Finn Durandal smiled graciously out over the court as though he owned it, holding his noble heroic pose with the ease of long practice, allowing the media pack to worship him. Finally, he raised a single hand. The floating cameras all came rushing in for close-ups. A few targeted Douglas as well, just to be sure they didn't miss out on anything. But it was the champion, and not the king, who held everyone's attention. And everyone there knew it.
My friends, today, as I promised you, I bring you the story of the century. No, not the return of the blessed Owen Deathstalker, unfortunately. The great quest continues, but I have to tell you that more and more of our noble paragons are returning disappointed. Instead, I stand here now to inform you of the return of a man almost as legendary, as well-loved, and almost as long-lost. A man long considered dead has been discovered very much alive. A hero, returned to us all in our hour of need. My friends, allow me to introduce to you James Campbell, first son of William and Niamh Campbell, the man born to be king!
For a moment, there was utter silence in the court. And then, a tall and handsome man in kingly robes came striding from behind the curtains and out onto the dais as though he belonged there, and always had. James Campbell stood beside Finn, who shook his hand warmly, and then put a comradely arm across his broad shoulders, while Douglas Campbell sat slumped on his throne, as though someone had just punched him under the heart. Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Return. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, Colleen Delaney, M.B. Van Dorn, Karen Carbone, Thomas Penny, and Chris Rowan. Episode 2, Brotherly Love and My Red Heaven. It couldn't be James. Not Brother James. It just couldn't. His elder brother had died in a stupid traffic accident long before Douglas was born. Everyone knew that. But the man on the dais had the same smiling face that Douglas had seen in so many family hollow images. He had the same long golden mane of hair as Douglas, and similarly rough, handsome features. Put them side by side, and even a stranger could have seen they were brothers. But how could it be James, the perfect prince whose memory Douglas had been raised to revere? Douglas found he was actually trembling, as though he'd been brought face to face with a ghost. James was big and broad and effortlessly hearty.
Please, please, silence, please.
Even the most hardened types crowded forward to the very edge of the raised dais, their eyes shining with more than just the pleasure of a good story. James Campbell, the man who should have been king, the greatest monarch the empire never had. His return was a miracle, and in the face of all that had happened recently, like everyone else, the media desperately needed good news and a hero they could believe in. If they couldn't have the Blessed Owen, Well, James Campbell was a perfectly acceptable substitute.
Thank you all for being here today on this gracious occasion. I am so glad to be back amongst my people. I look forward to the chance to serve humanity to the very best of my ability. Thank you.
The simultaneous applause from all the media was an unheard-of event. Douglas joined in, though he still wasn't sure what he felt or believed about this James. The short speech was all bluff, sincere charm, a slick and polished performance, and to Douglas it sounded more than a little rehearsed. Just the kind of thing Anne would have written for him once. He looked at her, but she had eyes only for James. James just shook his head.
If you please, I would like you all to direct your questions to my trusted friend and compatriot, Finn Durandal. Thank you.
That was the first wrong note. In everything Douglas had read on his deceased brother, all the historians had agreed that James had been a natural orator, fluent and commanding, and never afraid to speak his mind. That James had never let anyone speak for him. Douglas looked at Anne again and tried to attract her attention, but she was ignoring him, staring at Finn and James with a smug, almost self-satisfied smile. It gave her carefully sculpted, beautiful face an ugly look. Douglas realized that she had to have known about James long before this. She must have helped plan this whole scene, this carefully orchestrated reintroduction to the Empire. But she hadn't said a word to Douglas before now, until it was too late for him to interfere. Douglas considered that thought, not liking the taste of it. Anne Barclay was one of his oldest friends. Finn Durandal was his friend and his champion. And neither of them had said a word about his dead brother's return. If he couldn't trust them... Douglas realized Finn was speaking and made himself pay attention as the champion finally launched into the epic story of James's return from the dead. It was a hell of a story, and it sickened Douglas to his soul.
James didn't die of his injuries in that terrible accident. Instead, he was seriously injured and hideously disfigured far beyond the ability of medical knowledge to repair him in those days. There were even fears that he would come out of the regeneration tank mentally retarded. So King William and Queen Niamh decided to hide away their crippled, hideous son in the depths of their ancestral home, House Campbell, his existence to be kept secret until such time as new medical techniques could be developed to help him. But that could take years, even decades, with no guarantee of success at the end. So even as trusted servants tended to the hideous monster in his hidden room, William and Niam decided that James should be declared officially dead, while they raised another son to take his place.
As horrible as this sounds, it gets even darker.
There are hints, too. Hints that William was glad of an excuse to replace James with a new son. Hints that James, perfect and honorable James, had become too independent, too much his own man and a power in his own right, that William had become jealous of a son who threatened to be a much greater king than he had ever been. Apparently, William had determined that his new son would be more carefully guided and controlled. Douglas was to be a model son and a credit to his father, and nothing more. And so, my friends, this is how the story might have gone. However, a few weeks back, I, Finn Durandal, was contacted secretly by one of the guards responsible for watching over James in his cell deep under House Campbell. And this guard told me that James had in fact made a full physical and mental recovery years ago. but that William had chosen to still keep him prisoner, rather than have his favored son, Douglas, deposed. Indeed, William had decided that James was no longer needed, with Douglas due to be married and able to produce heirs of his own. And so, rather than risk having the truth come out after his death, William decided to have his first son killed. This web of lies and deceit was all too much for this honorable guard who'd grown fond of James. This is why he contacted me. He contacted the only man he felt he could still trust, the Imperial Champion. I immediately raised a small army of my own people and led them in a raid on House Campbell. The guard lowered the house's defenses at just the right moment, and we were able to catch William and his people entirely by surprise. We stormed House Campbell and got to James just in time. I brought him blinking out into the daylight. For the first time in years. On that day, I and all of my people cheered James's return from the dead. William is currently under house arrest at House Campbell, awaiting trial, and not available for comment at this time.
Douglas didn't know what to think. Not about Finn's story. That was obviously bullshit from beginning to end. Douglas had been brought up at House Campbell and had roamed all over it as a child, having paid special attention to all the places he was supposed to keep out of. There was no way a hidden room could have been kept secret from him. And besides, he'd seen footage of the original accident scene. It ran for ages on all the news and gossip shows until William bought up all the rights to protect Niamh from having to see it again and again. The recording showed James dead on the spot, his brilliant brains splattered all over the front of the vehicle that hit him. But if Douglas's elder brother really was dead, who was this? It certainly looked like James. And what did Finn have to gain from making up such a story? He couldn't expect to get away with putting forward a lookalike, could he?
Sir Durandal! Sir Durandal! What about the old news footage of James's accident? It clearly shows him dead at the scene.
Finn smiled easily in reply.
My people are investigating that even now. I'm pretty sure we'll discover the footage was faked to help cover William in Niamh's tracks.
That's enough!
Douglas was up out of his throne and on his feet before he even realized he was doing it. All eyes and cameras immediately turned on him, the air heavy with expectation. Douglas looked slowly around him, and knew that this was why he'd been brought here. He'd been told nothing, kept in the dark, just so he could be brought here unsuspecting, to make all his reactions in public, with all the worlds watching. They weren't his friends anymore, Finn and Anne. They had transferred their allegiance to this James, or whoever he really was. Douglas was on his own now, and he felt more alive than he had in ages. He walked slowly forward to the edge of the dais, keeping a distance between him and Finn and James.
I cannot believe my father was a party to this, or my mother. They were devoted to James. His death nearly destroyed them, too. I demand to speak to my father.
Of course. Arrangements shall be made, Your Majesty. But for the moment, your father is under armed guard for his own protection. Once news of James's return gets out and the details of his past imprisonment, well, we don't want aggrieved citizens taking matters into their own hands, do we? William is safer where he is. I know this must be hard for you to accept, Douglas. It hit me hard, too, that the man I served so faithfully for so many years should prove to be unworthy of the trust we all placed in him. But I give you my word. This really is James, restored to us at last. Have you no welcome for your brother?
All eyes turned on Douglas again. He looked at James. This was what it was all about. He'd been brought here just to answer that question, because his answer would decide how his own people would judge him. If he publicly accepted this man as his brother, he'd be trapped into playing Finn's game. And James, as the older brother, had a better claim to the throne than he did. If he denounced the man as an imposter, Douglas was pretty sure that Finn wouldn't have come this far without putting together some pretty intimidating evidence. And Douglas would be seen as a fool or a liar, ready to say anything to hang on to his throne. Finn and Anne had him exactly where they wanted him. Except they'd miscalculated. They'd assumed his time in seclusion had broken him, and it hadn't. He'd been asleep for a long time, but now he was awake again. He might have lost his best friend and his true love, but he was still the king, and he still took his duties seriously. His champion had revealed himself as a threat to his people and his family, and Douglas had always been ready to fight to the death for both. Of course, he couldn't do that now. He'd been very cleverly isolated. Better to play the part they expected and have them continue to underestimate him until he could take back the high ground. So Douglas smiled happily, if a little vaguely, at the man who claimed to be his brother James, and walked forward with an outstretched hand. They shook hands firmly. James impulsively pulled Douglas forwards into a hug, and they held each other close. It was a very touching scene, and the media pack just loved it, the floating cameras fighting it out for the best angles. Douglas kept his smile going and let James hug him, but he felt nothing at all. Except, perhaps, just the briefest of guilty thoughts. If by some dark miracle this really was James, the man who should have been king, then perhaps Douglas would be able to step down from the throne after all, and escape from all the strains and pressures of a job he'd never wanted anyway. Let James be king. Let him deal with the church militant and pure humanity and the terror. It was only a brief thought, the very briefest of temptations. Douglas had always known his duty, even when he was just a paragon. He'd fought to protect the people all his life, and he wasn't about to hand their fate over to this stranger. James finally released Douglas from the hug, and they stood face to face, smiling at each other. James's mouth went all wobbly, and he had to reach up to knuckle a manly tear from the corner of his eye. Another nice touch that the media just loved to pieces. Douglas could feel Finn's and Anne's eyes on him, and he kept his face carefully vague and vacant. James turned back to the reporters.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear. I am sure my dear younger brother had no idea of what had been done in his name. I am entirely positive King Douglas knew nothing of my years of imprisonment or the imminent death sentence from which Finn has so valiantly rescued me.
Of course, until James raised the point, no one there had thought that at all. But now suspicious eyes turned to Douglas, clearly considering just how much he could or should have known. He had to have known something, people would say. James smiled warmly at Douglas.
We must work together, brother, in this time of crisis.
Douglas kept on smiling.
Yes, of course, brother.
James then turned the full force of his personality and charm on his audience, saying all the right things in a firm and resonant voice, and Douglas could feel everyone comparing him unfavorably with his brother. More and more, the reporters were being seduced by James's manner and rhetoric, and embraced him as though he were the second coming of the Blessed Owen.
With Douglas by my side, I will not fail in my endeavor. I will find a way to stop the terror. I promise all of you, no stone will go unturned, no resource unexpended. I will bleed for humanity. I will fight for humanity until my very last breath, if need be. We must unite. We must come to a common ground. Humanity must be made pure once again. We must erase the stain of alien existence. Under the Church Militant, we must all unite with a pure human race. Only then will we be strong enough to fight in this, the darkest of hours.
Douglas continued to smile.
I don't know who the hell you really are, but that clinches it. James never believed in any of that shit. He had more sense, more conscience, and he never followed anyone's path but his own. So who are you, really?
Finn wasn't finished yet. He took up a martial stance beside James and fixed the media crowd with a stern stare.
Some of you will still be doubting that this really is the genuine James Campbell. Of course, that's quite understandable, given the extremely dramatic nature of his return. I see Nigel Glover of the Logris Times right there in front, as always. I have to say, Nigel, you don't look entirely convinced. Is there some question you wish to raise?
I remember, James. I got there in time to see him being loaded into the ambulance. Half his head was gone. How can we be sure this isn't some lookalike from the body shops, or even a clone?
And that was as far as he got. Other reporters started to shout him down. Some pushed and shoved him. And then suddenly they were all crowding in on him, and even throwing punches. Douglas looked immediately at Finn's paragons, expecting them to dive into the crowd and rescue the old man, but they did nothing. They just stood there, sniffing and smirking. Douglas was just about to dive in himself.
Enough!
When James launched off the dais into the crowd, grabbed the old reporter, and hauled him onto the safety of the raised dais. The old man stood trembling, more shocked than hurt, while James put a comforting arm around him. The other reporters milled uncertainly before the dais, still in an ugly mood. Finn stepped forward, raising both hands in a calming gesture.
Enough of that, my friends! This is a time for rejoicing, not violence. The Times has raised a very reasonable question. It's been a long time since we had to beware of clone imposters in public life. But in as important a case as this, the question had to come up eventually. That's why I have invited here today Elijah Ducat, the current clone representative in Parliament.
Ducat came through the curtains at the back, right on cue. A blocky, medium-height, average-looking fellow, he strode up to the front of the dais and stood beside Finn.
At the champion's request, I have performed a gene test on James Campbell. He is exactly who he claims to be. Details of my findings will be published shortly. My tests were very thorough. There is no way he could hide a clone background from me. DNA can't lie.
The still-shaken Glover was allowed to rejoin his fellows, who ignored him. Douglas was still looking at Ducat. You couldn't fake a gene test. So either James really was James, or the conspiracy went deeper than he'd suspected. If a respected figure like Ducat had been suborned, who else did Finn have in his pocket? But still, Douglas found that easier to believe than that his father and his mother could ever have been the villains Finn had declared them to be. Ducat left the dais, and Finn turned the meeting over to questions and answers. The reporters couldn't get the questions out fast enough. James avoided answering a lot of them by pleading ignorance of most recent events for obvious reasons, but he still managed to push pure humanity and the Church Militant as the answer to most of the Empire's problems. Douglas admired the performance from behind his pleasant face. Anne had clearly done her usual excellent job in preparing and coaching James, and Douglas was pretty sure a lot of the questions had been planted. It was what he would have done. Interestingly enough, James wasn't too good at the personal stuff. Questions like, "How do you feel?" and "What are you most looking forward to doing now you're free?" left him thrown and uncertain, and glancing to Finn or Anne for reassurance. In the end, Finn just stepped in and declared the audience over.
That's enough for today, my friends. There will be further opportunities for interviews and even one-on-ones. But James is clearly tired now and needs time to himself. J-
adjusting to his new world is obviously going to take time.
And quickly ushered James off stage while Finn was still speaking, and he was gone through the curtains before the reporters realized it. Douglas got to his feet, inclined his head regally to the media, and strode off the dais after Anne and James. He had no intention of being left alone on the dais after Finn and his people left. Facing questions, he had no idea how to answer safely. Behind the hanging curtains, Anne was patting James reassuringly on the shoulder, as though calming a nervous animal. Away from the rehearsed situation, James looked a lot less confident, and somehow smaller. Douglas started towards them, and then stopped as Finn and his paragons came through the curtains. Finn looked carefully at Douglas.
You're looking tired too, Douglas. Perhaps you should return to your chambers and get some rest. You have rather been thrown in at the deep end. You can catch up with James later.
Yes. It's all been a bit much, really. I'll see you all tomorrow.
You'd better go back with him, Anne. I'll send a couple of my people to go along with you. You can't be too careful these days.
Anne nodded, and she and Douglas walked back to the king's private chambers in silence. Two of Finn's paragons accompanied them. Douglas only knew them vaguely.
It's hard to know what to make of this, isn't it, Paragon?
But they wouldn't answer him when he tried to talk to them. People were running back and forth in the wide corridors, looking at Douglas with wide eyes, and over again he heard the word James on people's lips. The paragons kept everyone at a distance with menacing scowls. They finally came to Douglas's door, and he gestured for them to stand back so he could have a private word with Anne. They looked to her for confirmation, and reluctantly retired back down the corridor when she nodded. Douglas looked at Anne, and she met his gaze squarely, defiantly.
All right. What's going on, Anne?
How do you mean, Douglas?
You, Finn, James! Why wasn't I told any of this in advance?
Because you gave strict orders that you weren't to be disturbed for any reason. And because we weren't too sure what state you were in. I did look in on you a couple of times. You probably don't remember. You were pretty out of it. And given the delicate nature of the situation, when we couldn't be sure how much you did or didn't know about...
She broke off abruptly as Douglas's face grew cold and dangerous. She actually fell back a step before Douglas could regain control and put on his confused, vacant face again. He couldn't afford to confront her over James's identity. Not now.
Sorry. Sore spot there. Go on, you were saying.
We waited to establish the truth about James and your father before involving you. It could have all been rumors. Even after we had James secure and Jean tested, we left you alone as long as we dared, hoping you'd snap out of it. But you had to be there when we presented James to the public. It would have looked very bad if you hadn't been there, Douglas.
I can't believe what Finn said about my father. When can I speak to him, Anne?
Soon. You do believe this really is James, don't you, Douglas?
Can't fake a Jean test. Everyone knows that.
Anne nodded slowly.
Oh, you look tired. You've had a lot thrown at you on your first day back. I've got to talk with Finn now. We're going to schedule a whole series of public appearances for James to let everyone know he's back and introduce him to the Empire. That's going to keep us busy for some time. You don't need to be involved in any of that, Douglas. Get some rest. Take all the time you need to pull yourself together again, and we'll contact you when we need you.
Yes. Rest sounds good. We'll talk again later.
Anne gave him a searching look, but Douglas maintained his tired, defeated countenance. And after a long moment, Anne nodded and strode off back down the corridor, picking up the two paragons along the way. Douglas watched them go, and then considered the two guards standing by his door. They weren't his people. Anne had replaced the original guards with new men, undoubtedly loyal only to the new order. They were there as much to keep him in as to keep others out. Douglas nodded amiably to them and entered his private chambers. He locked the door behind him and then jammed a chair up against it as well, just in case. Safely back in his own territory, He dropped the pleasant mask and scowled so fiercely it was almost painful. He stamped back and forth, his hands clenched into tight fists, his mind whirling with plans for revenge and retribution. He would have liked to have kicked the hell out of the furniture, but that would have made too much noise, and he had no doubt the new guards were listening. He had to wonder what else Finn and Anne had taken from him, while he was still too blind with self-pity to notice. Had it really been 2 whole months? He looked around the room with new eyes, and was honestly shocked at the mess.
Dear God!
How could he have lived in such a sty for so long without noticing? No wonder Anne hadn't taken him seriously anymore. He forced himself to calm down, pushing back the anger, unclenching his fists. He had to be cool, calm, controlled. There were things he had to do. He strode over to his private comm unit and put through a call to House Campbell, punching in his old family security codes. The connection took longer than usual to make, and when his screen finally cleared, the face looking back at him was that of a stranger. He wore anonymous guard's armor with no markings. He recognized Douglas immediately and inclined his head.
Your Majesty, how may I serve you?
I want to talk to my father. Why are you answering his private number?
No one speaks to William Campbell. I'm sorry, Your Majesty, but I have my orders direct from the Durandal.
Finn is my champion. He answers to me. I am your king and I want to speak to my father.
The Durandal's orders were quite specific. No one is to speak to the prisoner without his express permission. And in this case, his authority derives from Parliament and not Your Majesty.
I could come down and see him.
I would advise against that, Your Majesty. All unauthorized ships approaching House Campbell are to be shot down on sight. The Durandal's orders.
Gosh, I'd better not do that then. I'll talk to Finn. Thank you for your assistance. You've been very helpful. I'll be sure to remember you.
Douglas couldn't resist that last barb and was rewarded by just a little uncertainty in the guard's face before he shut down the connection from his end.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Douglas scowled at the blank screen. Events had clearly slipped even further from his control than he'd realized. His first impulse was to commandeer a flyer, load it up with really big guns, and pay House Campbell a personal royal visit the guards there would never forget. But he knew he couldn't do that. Finn would be expecting something like that. And Douglas had a strong feeling he wouldn't be allowed to just stroll out of the palace, either. He was beginning to sense just how comprehensive a trap had been constructed around him by Finn and Anne, and God alone knew how many others. All he could do for now was play along, play the broken man in public, until he could get back into shape again, physically and mentally. And then he would show these upstarts and fake Brother James just how Douglas Campbell had become a legend among the Paragons long before he became king. He would show them what a real Campbell could do, with vengeance in his heart. But first, he had to clean up his room. He couldn't live in this dump anymore. Just looking at some of it made his skin crawl. And simple, repetitious, manual jobs always helped him think. It took him a long time to clear the mess up, but he had a lot of thinking to do. Over the next few weeks, Douglas sweated his way through every punishing exercise he could think of, while watching Brother James make the rounds of all the very best news and gossip shows on his view screen. It seemed like James was everywhere, dashing from public appearance to public appearance, his every move covered by all the celebrity channels, looking big and bluff and handsome with his bright eyes and bashful smile. James was the biggest news sensation since the return of the Terror. The people were desperate for good news, and the return of the man who should have been king was just what they needed. He wasn't Owen Deathstalker, but he would do. William, of course, was painted as the very blackest of villains, who only reluctantly kept James alive in case something happened to Douglas while he was playing at being a paragon. Should James have been needed, It seemed that William and Neum had arranged to have a powerful Esper delete all of James's memories since the crash, so he would know nothing of his imprisonment. This particular announcement led to open hostility against all Espers, even though the Oversoul went out of their way to deny that any of their people had ever been involved in such a scheme. No one believed them. There were demonstrations bordering on riots in cities on worlds all across the Empire, calling for strict new controls on all Espers. From all across the Empire, Espers quietly made their way to Logris and to the floating city of New Hope, where they holed up behind powerful protections and waited for the people to come to their senses again. They should have known better. The people had a new hero to believe in, and they didn't want their precious fairy story spoiled. Douglas exercised ceaselessly, ate all the right foods, and pushed his soft body back into shape again. He worked out regularly with his sword and shield, and the old skills came flooding back. He wanted to be ready for when Finn dropped the other shoe. He missed Jessamine and Lewis. He missed having people around him he could trust. But he had no time to indulge his own problems, when the Empire's problems were clearly so much bigger. Douglas seemed to be the only person in the whole Empire who wasn't impressed by James. This larger-than-life hero on the viewscreen wasn't the easygoing, intelligent, deeply moral man Douglas had heard about all his life. This new James was just too perfect. He always knew the right thing to say, even if it didn't seem to mean much on closer examination. He always came out with the right answers, even if they didn't always fit the question. He was a great one for the barbed soundbite, delivered with a flashing smile and just a hint of a wink, and the public ate it up with spoons. Douglas thought James was beginning to look over-rehearsed, and he still wasn't very good at the personal stuff. He was fine at shaking hands with people and asking interested questions, but he couldn't ad-lib to save his life. Fortunately, there were always some of Finn's people close at hand to whisk him away on urgent business if it became clear James was getting out of his depth. Douglas thought James was hollow, all surface charm, with nothing original in his head that hadn't been put there. It bothered Douglas greatly that no one else could see it. None so blind, he supposed. Douglas hadn't been allowed to meet with James since that first day, but he kept pushing. Sooner or later, Finn and Anne would have to let the two brothers meet again, because it would look decidedly odd if they didn't. And when that finally happened, Douglas was determined to be ready with a whole bunch of really awkward questions. He no longer had any doubts that James was a fake of some kind. For all his coaching, this James still made occasional factual errors about his life before the accident. Small things, perhaps, that only another member of Clan Campbell could have known, but Douglas spotted them immediately. His whole early life, Douglas had been compared, usually unfavorably, to his glorious deceased older brother. When James was occasionally caught in an error and called on it by an interviewer, James just turned up his smile another notch and blamed his uncertain memory on residual problems from his head injuries in the crash. And then no one would push it, for fear of seeming to bully an invalid. The undoubted highlight of James's media rounds was a guest appearance on that most popular of vid soaps, The Quality. By then, in its triumphant fifth season, with two shows every day and a compilation at weekends, The Quality represented a highly idealized view of sin, scandal, and outrageous clothes among the aristocrats of the Empress Lionstone's time. It was required viewing all across the Empire, if only so one could join in on what everyone else was talking about.
But I love Evangeline.
Oh, Finley, what can she offer you that I can't? Don't you like what you see?
James played his ancestor Finley Campbell badly. He had charm but no talent, and his performance was more wooden than most of the furniture, but no one cared. You didn't watch a soap like The Quality for the subtlety of the performances anyway. James appeared opposite the undisputed star of the show, the almost impossibly beautiful and radiant Treasure McKenzie, who played the social butterfly Chantel.
We were meant to be together.
She wasn't that great an actress herself, but since it had been said truly of her that if she'd been any more voluptuous she would have been in 4D, no one gave a damn. As long as she kept smiling, taking deep breaths, and threatening to lose her clothes at every twist and turn of the plot, people kept watching. So treasure floated becomingly around James, who read his lines carefully from the idiot boards and concentrated on looking good.
I don't know how to resist you.
Then don't.
That episode gained the highest ratings the show had ever known. Douglas turned the view screen off and studied himself in the mirror. He looked good. He'd burned off all the flab, and he looked like a fighter again. His mind was sharp and clear, and he was more than ready to remind his many enemies that a Campbell was never more dangerous than when he had nothing left to lose. But it would have to be done slowly and subtly. He would have to continue to act confused and beaten down in public, especially when Finn and Anne were around, until he could prove to the people who mattered that he was his old self again and pick up some useful allies. The problem was, whom to trust? How deep had the rot gone? During his self-pitying seclusion, Finn had taken the opportunity to quietly replace all the King's people with new faces loyal only to the Durandal. Douglas's guards and even his servants were gone, and a lot of people he'd considered his friends wouldn't even answer his calls anymore. Douglas had been very carefully isolated, so that even if he did recover from his fugue, he'd have no one to turn to. But there were still a few people that even Finn couldn't corrupt. Emma Steele, for example, the paragon from Mistworld who was now patrolling Logris, and maybe Stuart Lennox, Lewis's replacement paragon from Viramond, if only Douglas could work out a way to contact them privately. And sometimes, Douglas still thought about Lewis and Jessamine, and wondered quietly if, since he'd been so wrong about so many other things, just maybe he might have been wrong about them, too. He wanted to believe they'd never been traitors. He had loved them both, after all. Next to Douglas, James had the biggest and most luxurious set of private chambers in the palace. Anne had provided them for him by the simple expedient of kicking out the original occupants and defying them to do anything about it. The original owners had enough sense to see which way the wind was blowing and left without making any fuss. They, in turn, kicked out someone lower in status than they and took over their quarters. For the next few days, no one could move in the palace because the corridors were full of people changing rooms. The order to house James in the palace had King Douglas's name on it, but everyone knew it really came from Anne, and by extension, Finn. James didn't actually like his new quarters much. They were too big, too opulent, too overpowering. He wandered from room to room feeling lost and ill at ease, afraid to touch anything in case he broke it. His quarters were full of state-of-the-art tech that he didn't know how to work. He wasn't allowed any personal servants. They might learn something and talk. James had a favorite chair tucked away in one corner of his bedroom, in which he spent most of his time off. The problem was, these were quarters fit for a king, and James didn't want to be a king. The thought alone scared him. He was just as scared of being James Campbell, given all the expectations that came with the name, but he was even more frightened of Finn Durandal, so he kept all these thoughts strictly to himself. The only person he ever dared to say anything to was Anne, but although she was never too busy to smile and comfort him, she never really listened to anything he said. James belonged to Finn and Anne. He knew that. They owned him, body and soul. He was their creation.
You're very kind. Oh, please, you're too kind. Thank you, my dear friends.
He was busy practicing sincere smiles in front of the parlor mirror when Finn arrived late one morning, bringing with him the clone representative, Elijah Ducat. James started trembling the moment he saw Ducat. It was a terrible thing to meet one's own maker. James still had nightmares about some of the invasive surgeries Ducat had put him through, on Finn's orders. But he didn't make any fuss when Ducat unpacked his diagnostics kit. He just took off his frilly shirt and stood waiting patiently. James didn't want to make Finn angry. Ducat took his time with the diagnostics, checking James's readings carefully against their expected optimums. He finally started packing away his equipment. James relaxed just a little and quietly put his shirt back on as Ducat talked with Finn about him as though he weren't there.
He's in excellent shape, Sir Durandal. No deviation from the original process. The most perfect clone I've ever produced.
I should hope so, considering how much you and your people charge me to make him.
Ah, yes, but clones aren't cheap, especially when they are illegal. And you did want something special. With all the improvements I built into this model, he's practically a Hayden man.
Finn frowned suddenly.
I told you. No implants, no tech. Nothing that might show up on a scanner. I hope you haven't been too creative, Elijah. If I've got to tear this model apart and start over, I'll do the same with you. Slowly.
Relax, Sir Durandal, relax!
Ducat's hands fluttered nervously.
I can assure you he's entirely organic. He's faster, stronger, and has better reflexes than most of the fighters you'll find in the arena these days. A born killer, just as you requested.
Pity he isn't a bit smarter. It's a real pain in the ass having to teach him his answers to questions parrot fashion all the time just to get him through interviews.
Oh, he's just as intelligent as the original, potentially. Possibly even more so. He just lacks a context to work from. You cannot learn everything from books. A certain lack of social skills is only to be expected. He's only 6 months old, after all.
James just stood there, his face carefully blank, waiting to be told what to do. He never volunteered anything. That wasn't his place. And Finn hurt him, if he ever looked like he was forgetting his place. In public, James was always calm and confident and perfectly poised, because that was what Finn wanted. In private, James was quiet, diffident, and eager to please, because he wanted to go on living. Finn finally waved Ducat away and looked upon his creation, his possession, his latest weapon, and smiled, remembering. Finn Durandal had personally led the raid on House Campbell, accompanied by his personal guard of 6 returned paragons and 4 assault ships full of Church Militant and Pure Humanity troops. Armed and armored, fanatics to a man and a woman, pumped full of righteousness and knockoff battle drugs, they were sworn to fight and die in Finn's name for the cause. Cannon fodder, basically. Finn commanded the lead ship himself. Some pleasures were just too tasty to be shared with anyone. William's security people challenged him automatically as he approached, only to relax once they recognized his face. Finn had been to House Campbell many times before, as an old friend of Douglas. All he had to do was make vague allusions to a possible security alarm, and William ordered all his defenses dropped and invited in Finn and all his people. As easy as that. William had no reason to distrust the Imperial champion. Finn's ships landed unchallenged on the house's private landing pads. Finn's attack troops immediately spilled out, armed to the teeth and shouting their vicious slogans. Finn would have liked more of an element of surprise on his side, but he had to make allowances when working with thugs and fanatics. Strategy was a mystery to people blind to everything but their cause. So Finn just pointed them in the right direction and let them get on with it. They charged off the landing pads and into the grounds, killing everyone they saw. The security guards went down first, followed by gardeners and servants and old family retainers. Only the guards had weapons, of course, and most never even got a chance to use them. Those few who did were quickly outnumbered and overrun. Everyone else died where they stood. Or if they ran, they were shot in the back. Finn had no interest in taking any prisoners. No one had time to send a warning, and Finn had come prepared with special equipment in his lead ship to make sure no comm messages would leave House Campbell. He sauntered unhurriedly across the great green lawns toward the house, accompanied by his 6 beaming paragons, enjoying the smell of smoke in the air as his people set fire to the ancient gardens. Trees blazed like torches, flower beds became ashes, and the old hedge maze burned brightly like a funeral pyre. And everywhere there were dead men and women, their blood and brains and guts seeping out onto the neatly cropped grass. The ancestral grounds of House Campbell had become an abattoir, and Finn Durandal couldn't have been happier. He strode like a conqueror into the great hall of House Campbell, casually destroying irreplaceable treasures as he went, and warmed his hands before the great open fireplace. It was an unseasonably chilly morning. He looked around, smiling. Finn's people dragged a beaten and bloodied William Campbell into what had once been his hall, and dropped the old man in a heap at Finn's feet. Finn looked thoughtfully at the thugs in their church militant armor. They stirred uneasily under his gaze.
Did he put up a fight? I wouldn't have thought the old man had it in him.
Well, not as such. But he said things.
Oh, well, I don't suppose it matters. I never liked him anyway. And I do so admire zeal. Bring him outside.
Finn led the way out of the house and across the devastated grounds until they came at last to James's grave. William stumbled along and had trouble keeping up, but the Paragons kept him moving with kicks and general abuse. They were having a good time. Finn finally let the old man drop to the grass at the foot of his eldest son's grave, while he looked casually out over the artificial lake. Dead swans lay floating in the bloody waters. Finn's smile widened. He approved of thoroughness. William slowly struggled up onto his knees and looked at Finn, his bloody mouth quivering with outrage. One of the Paragons placed a heavy hand on his shoulder to make sure he stayed on his knees.
For God's sake, why, Finn? What's the meaning of this? Does Douglas know you're here?
Dear Douglas knows very little about what goes on these days. But it wouldn't matter if he did. Douglas spent force, as are you. And neither of you matters a damn in the scheme of things anymore. I did all this because I could. Because it pleased me. And don't look for rescue. All of your own people are dead. And no one will be coming from outside. Your day is over, William. And mine is just beginning.
How could you do this, Finn? You're Douglas's friend. You were always welcome here. You and he used to have such good times here.
Things change, people change. You might say I've grown up since then. You never really knew me, William. But you do now.
William looked uncertainly at James's grave.
What do you want here? What could possibly be worth all this death and destruction?
I'm glad you asked that, William. I'm here for James. No good to anyone just lying in the ground, but I have a use for him. Dig him up, boys.
You bastard!
William tried to surge to his feet, but the Paragons hit him, and he fell helplessly to the ground.
Ah, William. Children are such hostages to fortune, aren't they? Even when they're dead.
Finn's people dug up the grave, while William watched helplessly. It didn't take them long to get down to the coffin, break open the lid, and reveal the corpse. The funeral technicians had done an excellent job. Still perfectly preserved, all of James's many injuries had been cunningly disguised. He might only have been sleeping.
God have mercy.
No one paid William any attention. Finn clambered down into the open grave so he could look James in the face, close up. Finally, he nodded, smiled, and then leaned forward and kissed James on his dead lips.
Ducat, take your samples.
Shh! No names! You promised no names!
Oh, get on with it.
Ducat waited for Finn to vacate the grave, and then clambered clumsily down to take his cell samples. He was swiftly efficient, though he was careful never to look at the corpse's face. When he was finished, he got out of the grave as fast as he could, and Finn then nodded to one of his people, who dropped a small transmutation bomb into the hole.
Oh, don't blame me. This is all Douglas's fault. None of this had to have happened, but he should have made me champion.
You always were a petty-minded little shit.
Take him back to House Campbell. Lock him up somewhere secure, then set up a rotation of guards for the house and the grounds. No one gets in or out unless they're with me. Oh, and boys, you can play with William, but don't break him. I may have a use for him later on.
You will pay! You will pay for this!
He looked out over the burning gardens as his men dragged William away.
Someday, all Logris will look like this.
Back in James's chambers, Finn strolled around his creation, studying him from all angles. The clone looked good. He looked very good. Finn approved of good work. Dukat had been surprisingly easy to bring on board. All he wanted in return for his services and the Dr. Gene test was a promise from Finn to bring the clone underground back to power and prominence again. And a whole bagload of money, of course. Only Dukat and a select few from the clone underground knew the truth. The less who knew, the less chance there was that someone might develop a conscience and talk. The deal itself was simple enough. In return for James, Finn would see to it that once the Transmutation Board had wiped planets clean of troublesome alien life, vast numbers of new clones would be produced to populate these new terraformed worlds. These new populations, along with their planetary votes in Parliament, would make the clones a force to be reckoned with again. Dukat was also responsible for keeping the original cell samples in a safe place, so that another James could be produced if the first one didn't work out. That was one of the first things Finn told James, just so he knew where he stood. Anne Barclay had dug up everything the clone James needed to know from her extensive archives. It wasn't difficult. Down the years, many books had been written and documentaries produced about the short but promising life of the man who should have been king. Anne and Finn had then taught the clone James all he needed to know on how to speak, how to move, how to act in public. He picked it up surprisingly quickly. As a blank slate, he was endlessly hungry for information about himself, and the process was aided by Finn's punishing him severely if he got things wrong, and Anne's comforting him afterwards. Bad cop, good cop. Carrot and stick. The old ways are always the best. James was still having trouble with some social skills, but they were mostly the kind you could pick up only by experience, which was why Finn insisted that James do so much at once. A full schedule of meetings and talks immersed James in the world he had to fool. It was sink or swim, but it seemed to be working. And if it was a bit hard on James, well, it wasn't as if he was a real person after all. Anne was sitting opposite James. Even just sitting, she still looked stiff and awkward in her new, beautiful body.
You still need to do more work on your small talk. I know chatting makes you nervous, James, but you can only learn by doing. When in doubt, just smile and say something nice. It doesn't have to be true. Few compliments are.
I do my best. It's just I get tired. There's so much to do, and it never stops.
It was a casual blow Finn delivered, but there was real power behind it. James rocked on his feet, but didn't fall. He stopped talking and stood very straight, his hands at his sides.
You will do what I tell you to do when I tell you to do it.
Anne was up out of her chair, glaring at Finn.
There was no need for that. He's doing his best.
Finn looked at her coolly.
I will do what I will do, Anne, and no one gets to stop me anymore. You of all people should know that. James has to be perfect in his part, or all our plans will come to nothing. So James is going to be perfect, whatever it takes.
He smiled at James.
I own you, boy, body and soul. I will make you king, and the Empire will bow down to you, but only because it pleases me to do so. You're mine, and always will be. Now, I must be about my business. So many lives to ruin, so little time. And make sure he's fully briefed for the news interview in an hour. And remember, we are not at home to Mr. Screw-Up.
He patted James lightly on his reddening cheek, blew Anne a kiss, and then swept out of the luxurious chamber, with Ducat hurrying after him. Only then did James dare to sit down. His hands were trembling, and he clasped them tightly together in his lap. Anne sat on the padded arm of his chair and put her arm around his shoulders.
Why doesn't Finn like me? I do everything he tells me to do. I try my hardest, always.
Oh, there, there, James. Don't take on so. It's just his way. We're both very pleased with your progress so far, and neither of us have any doubts about your abilities. Not really.
Then why is he always like that? Why can't I ever please him? I want to please him.
Finn isn't easy to get to know, and he has a lot on his mind. You just carry on as you are. You're doing fine.
She hugged him, one magnificent breast pressing against the side of his face. James blushed bright red and sat very still, so he wouldn't startle her and make her move away. James found Anne's beauty disturbing in a whole bunch of ways he didn't really understand yet. When Treasure Mackenzie had hugged him on the set of The Quality, he'd thought he was going to pass out from lack of blood to the head. It had all gone somewhere else. Anne knew the effect she had on him, and she loved to tease him. She could accept attention from James that would have made her uncomfortable if it had come from anyone else. Perhaps because James had never known the old Anne. As far as he knew, she'd always been beautiful. She found it easier to be feminine with him. She still had trouble calling up the confidence to bring it off successfully with anyone else. She liked the effect her new femininity had on men, the way it distracted and short-circuited their thinking, but she didn't trust it yet. Part of her still suspected they were secretly laughing at her. And if they were, she'd make them pay. She'd make them suffer. Every damned one of them.
Deathstalker Return is continued on the next CD.